And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
Latest episode of Hear That Podcast Ground is presented by Visa Network, working for everyone. Paul Ener Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic here working for you. Jay, working hard, had the tough assignment of having to spend a week down in long weekend down in Palm Beach at the Breakers, a place that there's very few people that in the world or that listen to this that would feel comfortable staying and affording the Breakers for a few days, but you got to live the life of luxury and then go to your hotel.
We did not get to stay. We not only didn't get to stay at the Breakers, we didn't get a media room inside of the Breakers. They did a little pop up tent out in the parking lot for the media. So we were, and it sounds worse than it was. It was a hard tent. There was air conditioning. They kept it stocked with food the entire time. They treated us well, but I just thought it was funny how it was kind of like, yeah, keep the media peasants out there. And I did. I have never felt more like a peasant in my life. I've done a lot of traveling. I was fortunate to do a lot of traveling as a kid with my family. And since I've grown up, and that is just a different level of prestige and money. It's a gorgeous area, but you really don't feel like you belong.
No, it's not the Hamilton Arby's.
It is not.
but at least, you know, you were outside, you stayed in your lane, you didn't get kicked out of a restaurant or anything like that. So
not like one of our former, or one of our colleagues,
one of our
former beat Bengals beat writers.
See, I think that there should be pride in this, so I'm going to give her credit. Our good friend Kat Terrell covers the Saints, was politely asked to leave a restaurant that she was loitering in because she was trying to get time with ownership that would be coming through and waiting for them to come through. I've been at these events before. Yeah. They have you stationed either in a corner over here or in a hallway over there. There's only so many places you can be, and you hang out there. And you wait for someone to come through to catch their ear for a second or ask them a couple of questions that could be either off or on the record or just say hello, whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. But if they have you guys stationed outside, purposely outside, I commend Kat for trying to find the spot she could be at and working it so that she can get the time with ownership. So even if she got politely asked to leave the restaurant.
The funny thing is she was in that restaurant the night before after the swanky party, and let's just say she probably spent a lot of money there, so I'm surprised they would ask her to leave the following day.
No such thing as enough money at the Breakers. So you're down at the Breakers, owners meetings, the center of sort of the NFL world for a few days. No big news really on the field. I mean, overtime, the vote was kind of the only real thing. We'll get more on that in a second. They changed the overtime rule. Now you need a possession for each team, essentially. I got thoughts on that. We'll get to that later because more important stuff. Most of the news came on questions and topics around off the field, asked to Roger Goodell about Deshaun Watson, the Brian Flores lawsuit. There's just so many things that have kind of been going on in the outside of the NFL world. But from a Bengals standpoint, the news of going down there is always, you know, a chance to sit down and talk with Katie Blackburn. Mike Brown usually goes. Mike didn't go, right, this time, Jay?
Yeah, Mike didn't make it. He's fine. He didn't make the trip this year. He kind of let Katie ease into that role, and she was great.
So it was a chance to talk with ownership about a number of different things, and a number of different things were talked about. You can read about some of them up on the site now. Jay has a recap of, you had about a half hour with Katie over breakfast, I guess, there at the Breakers.
It was breakfast hour. We did not eat. We were in a nice hallway at a table right next to the restaurant. So you will hear some dishes clanking and some activity, but we were just talking. We were not eating.
About half hour. This is one of the two times really per year that ownership kind of officially talks on the record. It's this one, and then there's right before the season starts at Mock Turtle Soup, the pre-season luncheon. So it's important. There's a lot of big questions surrounding the organization. First time we've had a chance to talk to them since the Super Bowl and a million of other things that have happened. So there's a lot to really get to. Again, Jay's got a story up that kind of recaps a lot of what Katie had to say and the high points. And there were some very important high points that we are going to get to here. We got some other stories up on the site, too. If you have a question, mailbag, we're going to do some mailbag at the end of this podcast. But I'm also going to have one that's going to be up tomorrow. But if you want to sneak a question, you're listening to this, you can try to listen to that. And then I revisited the Bengals 2019 draft and about what we kind of learned about men and what it says about now. It's the first draft where they cross over into the Zach Taylor era. And so I do this every year, and it's kind of a way to grade 3 years later, like you're supposed to wait and do. But it tends to teach some really important lessons about what the Bengals do and about maybe what they should or shouldn't have learned from that exercise. I would say don't trade up in the fourth round would be one of those lessons from 2019. But you can read all about that stuff that's up on the site right now, including Jay. You also had kind of a recap. Zach Taylor did about 40 minutes with the media down there as well this week and talked about a number of things about overtime, about Jamar Chase's sophomore season, about Larry Ogunjobi, all that stuff. Is up on the site. Real quick before we get into Katie, did you have any Zach takeaways? We hear from him so often that it's kind of an afterthought in the course of a week where we do get to talk to ownership.
Yeah, it was a weird setup that they had. They were in a ballroom. It was tile floors. They had huge speaker setups for each head coach, and they were only a few feet apart. So it was massively loud. It was a very difficult environment to conduct an interview in. And then people were popping in and out and walking up to the side of where Zach is sitting. And then he's turning his head and talking to them. You can barely hear him. He mentioned the overtime. I think the Bengals are in agreement on that it worked for them the way you get a stop and you win. So you can kind of see why they didn't vote for it. But other than that, I guess my big takeaway was the Ogunjobi thing where he called him a Bengal for life, even though he's only been there 1 year, and just the respect and the love that they have for that guy and what he gave him for the 10 months he was in the building, is undoubtable, but it's not going to happen where Larry Ogunjobi is going to come back. It's just, it would be too awkward of a dynamic to have BJ being played as the starter and then Larry coming back. If, you know, once he's healthy, it's probably, he's not going to get anywhere near the deal that got taken off the table by the Bears. So they wish him well. They stay in contact with him. They still talk to him and let him know that they're thinking of him. But if anybody was holding out hope that maybe Larry would come back after the Bears deal fell through, that's not going to happen.
That spot is, again, it's perfectly set up for a developing high-end rookie to come in and play behind BJ Hill. We've talked about that a lot. We will talk about that a lot more as we get into more draft talk going forward. Let's dive into Katie Blackburn. So you guys sit down. A number of talking points that we probably knew were going to come up came up. What we want to do is just let you listen to the conversation. It's trimmed down for efficiency here. So about 30 plus minutes down to about 20 minutes here of conversation with questions and answers left in full, but we cut out some of the topics and things like that. So we took out all the overtime stuff and some other things just because you guys know that already and we don't need to dive further than that. It's going to keep it Bengal-centric. Indoor practice facility. Is the big talker from that. You probably have heard this news by now already. The Bengals actively looking at building, the most aggressive language we've heard towards this big issue they've had forever. So you're going to hear a conversation about that. Stadium, huge deal on the horizon, obviously. It's happening across the league. Buffalo just signed their deal. They gave them $850 million in public funds. Again, key word there, public funds for a stadium that's going to probably end up costing about $1.4 billion in Orchard Park. Also, other places, Nashville, Carolina, Kansas City, all having stadium conversations right now. So you'll hear background on where the stadium thing stands at this moment in Katie's eyes, with the Buffalo kind of public money drop in there as part of this conversation of, you know, we all know what the stadium deal did around here for a while and how it made people feel and how it still is kind of feels like it hangs over the county a little bit. So some more background on how they're viewing that. Burrow's big contract is hanging out there. Jesse Bates is hanging out there. These are some of the big topics, and Katie kind of gives ownership's view on all of those and many other things. We're just going to bring you Katie. Then Jay and I are going to come back and react to kind of what we think some of the major takeaways on all of that are. Then we'll get to the reader mailbag. So a lot to do, but let's start with Bengals Executive Vice President Katie Blackburn at the owners' meetings in Palm Beach.
I know you guys didn't finish it the way you wanted to, but you look at last year and the success. I mean, did it feel vindicating at all? The way that you guys have kind of done this, that it finally paid off, and or is there that lingering disappointment?
It was just, I mean, it was fun. It was an amazing season, and you're right, coming out of COVID and coming off the Joe Burrow injury, it was just incredible to have the turnaround and get as far as we did. And we had a great group of players, and that made it, I think they were appealing to not just our fans, but I think a lot of fans, and that made it fun. It's hard to get to the Super Bowl, so anytime you get there, you have to be appreciative and enjoy that's what you're working. Obviously we wanted that one final step, and I guess we still have something to keep shooting for in the near term. But it was just sort of a, I don't know what the right word is, you know, someone said magical, someone just said amazing. I don't know that I would say vindictive, to be fair, but I felt great for my dad, who's worked so hard for, you know, so long, and he does try to do things the right way. There's a lot of, you know, I think he does a lot of things in a way that in his mind, you know, he's never thinking just Bengals. He's thinking overall NFL all the time. And so it was great to see us get a chance to enjoy the season and all the things that you're trying to do all the time come almost to complete fruition.
The last three off seasons, you guys have spent heavily in free agency, which is something you haven't done a lot lately. Is it fair to say this is a philosophy change, or is it more just what you had to do the last 3 years to kind of get to this point?
I mean, I think it's a year-by-year thing. There's probably some years, I think we'd be open to either approach depending on the year and what you need and what might be out there. And I think we still believe firmly in the draft and trying to retain our own guys and build off of that. But, you know, there's no question that free agency is a part of the system. And if you can find a way to make that fit in and help the team. And you're right, last year we really got some players that were key parts of getting us to where we got last year, so it worked out well. So if we can do that, we're certainly going to look at doing that.
Depends. I'm sorry, I was just going to ask you. You had some tough experiences with free agency in the past, Antoine Orr, Bryant, guys who hurt. Now when you see when guys are healthy, what they can add, do you think that might be
I mean, I think they, I don't know, they have statistics on this that I should be able to spit out, you know, 48% of the free agents have playing time of, you know, whatever. So, but everything's that way. A draft pick, there's certainly no, you know, you have to build and work your way into. So, I don't think we like I said, we took shots before. Are you going to hit on them all the time? Okay. Not necessarily. I don't think that happens for any team all the time. So, but we did really well last year, and I hope that we can, I don't know, if we figured something out, I hope so, and I hope we can continue to have the same success. I love the guys we got this year.
Yeah. Like Jay said, it's been 3 years. It's been, I mean, and they've been all good classes.
I will. I mean, I do think we have spent more time studying the free agents prior to the free agency. You know, we have invested more time in doing that, and that seems to be paying off. So, or you know, I think we are getting good, better results with some of the things we've been doing.
What do you think was the reason why that you guys started spending more time on the free agent process?
Well, I mean, I just feel like we had a better, you know, we improved. It's like everything. We looked at it, but we improved the way we were doing it, just the way we, you know, our scouts and the role they play, and, you know, working with the coaches in terms of sort of studying the free agent, you know, doing our assessments of the free agents. I think, you know, Steven Radicevich has been great, helped a lot, and done some great things. Duke has, I just feel like we've improved our process and spent a little more time working to find the pieces and the players that will fit our team.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
How proud are you, or were you, are you still, the work that Elizabeth has done? It seems like she's made such a big difference.
Elizabeth's been great. I mean, everyone's always proud of their kids, right? But she just has an energy and an enthusiasm and a get-it-done attitude that really, it's been great. I can't say enough about all the great things and reactions she's gotten from everyone, and you know, she's a busy person. But she's enjoyed it, and it's just been fun to have her here and get that extra boost of energy that helped it. You know, like I said, getting the Reading of Honor done was amazing. It was really a great event. It was a great thing for our alumni players, great thing for the fans, and she came and got it done. And obviously, we have a great social team, and so, and she'll always say she doesn't deserve all that credit, but and she gets a lot of it for that. But we have a great social team, and she's worked with them, and you're right, we did amazing things in the social area that are impressive and good to see. Let's get done. So anyway, it's been fun to have her around. And
Mike made the comment at the pre-camp luncheon last year that she's the only one in the family that's not afraid of him, which kind of you know, led to the point that maybe he wasn't in favor, didn't agree with the Ring of Honor. I'm curious, what was he like that night? How did he soak in that ceremony?
I know he thought it was. I think he was very complimentary. He was, I think, happy that He was very happy that it happened, and I think he thought it was a great thing. And so he, I don't know if, you know, I think he was proud to see Elizabeth come in and push hard enough to make it happen.
Where are you guys at in terms of your negotiation process with Jesse? Obviously, he, Zach said it's Combine, you know, Jesse's a really important part, but obviously you play a big role in that. So can you just give us an update on where you guys stand with all of that?
Well, there hasn't been a lot to report on since we put the tag on him. We obviously tried to get him re-signed last year. Thought we had a good chance of getting that done, but it didn't quite get there. So I think they wanted to see where the market went a little bit in free agency, and at some point we'll circle back with them and see where we are. But obviously we love Jesse as a player, and if there's a way that we can get something worked out, that would be great. And we'll just have to see where it goes.
From a philosophy standpoint, would you guys be okay with him playing on the franchise tag number, or are you really going to try and press to get something long-term done by the July 15th deadline?
I mean, I don't view it that different from last year. We would have loved to have gotten something done, but if not, we hope that he would play and be a great part of the team, and we'd be happy to have him as part of the team either way.
Yeah.
And speaking of last year, he still recorded for the voluntary stuff. That may not be the case this year. Would that hinder negotiations, or is that something you just respect his decision to do that if that's what he is going to do?
I mean, I don't know that hinder is the right word. That's Jesse's choice to handle that however he chooses to handle that, but I think we'll have a good enough relationship. I can't speak to what he thinks is the right thing to do there, but like I said, at the end of the day, I hope that he's playing for the Bengals this year and is a great contributor to the team, and we'll see how that all plays out.
None of these happen in a vacuum. I mean,
right.
There's ripples for every contract you sign. How much of the big ones coming down the line next year are playing a factor in the decision
this
year?
That's part of what we've been looking at, trying to manage those things. And, you know, we'd love to make every guy on our team the highest paid, but at the end of the day, you have to fit a lot of pieces together. And so we're trying to find ways to, that hopefully are win-wins. You know, we still keep enough pieces and find ways to keep the key pieces together. And so different people have different ideas sometimes of how those pieces can fit together, and that's okay. But
While we're on the topic of contracts, I just feel like I have to ask, one of the highest ranking, influential, powerful, whatever word you want to use, women in the league, just your thoughts on the Deshaun Watson contract. Because there has been some reports, teams are angry by it, that he was the guy that got the first
fully
guaranteed big contract like that. So your thoughts on it being him specifically, and then also your thoughts on that's going to have a ripple effect as well on when you start talking to Joe next year.
All contracts can have a ripple effect. I haven't looked at it closely enough, so I don't know if there's ways that the guarantees can void if certain things happen. And so, but I haven't looked at it closely enough yet, so maybe that's not something that can happen. But, you know, there's no question that all these contracts have ripple effects, so we'll see. I have not had a chance to really study it yet or look at it, to be fair. I'm behind.
I mean, does it give you pause, or is it almost, I don't know, scary is the right word, but to see that much guaranteed money, and maybe that's what is going to become the norm in quarterback negotiations?
You know, I guess at the end of the day, we always just try to do what, I mean, like I said, if your quarterback plays, I don't focus on the guarantees much, because in theory, if the player gets the money at the end of the day, that's what's important to them. And so if the player's good enough and plays out the contract, he gets the money. And the thing that always has given us some pause is if for some reason things go badly, we're not looking to, it's, you know, it's not fair to the team in the future if there's a large amount of money going to someone else with the way the system works today. So we've always tried to balance that out, but, you know, we work in a world where we realize that other contracts have some effect, so we'll just have to see where it all stands when it comes up to be that time. But you know, we're just trying to make sure that we're giving all teams, you know, at some point we're going to pay the cap amount, right? Mm-hmm. And so we just have to find a way to make that work that's in the best interest of the team.
Staying on that, I was reading something yesterday about what Steve Bisciotti was saying about Lamar Jackson and how Lamar Jackson's kind of unique in the sense that he's not really in a rush to get his, like, he's going to play on his fifth year. Do you have to get the deal with Joe done next year, or do you, how does that work? Where, you know, with like Lamar, he's willing to kind of play it out, whereas with some of these other guys like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, they got it done way early. How do you manage those different philosophies?
I mean, it's just a matter of when you talk to the agent when it's that time, and it's a feel for you know, some of it's their messaging as to what they want to do, and it's a matter of how everything else is set up at the, you know, team. And obviously if things work well, we're open to both approaches, and it's just a matter of working through it with the player and the agent. So
With Carson and Andy, you got it done as soon as you could. That's right.
We did get it done earlier with those guys, so we're certainly open to doing something. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of what everybody, you know, it takes both parties to agree on what will work.
The other big news of the week is the Buffalo Stadium deal, all that public money. I'm just curious to get your thoughts, reaction to that.
Well, we're certainly following a little bit of what's happening in some of the other markets. I'm really proud of the deal we got done in Cincinnati. I feel like we built a stadium. You know, we did. We built a stadium at a cost that was really cost effective when you look at what they're spending these days. It served us really well. We've maintained it. I think we can get it. It has more years in it for sure, but you know, you do need to try to keep up, and so it's something that we're always looking at. And as, and I don't think it's, you know, it's a process that we're actively, you know, looking at ways to try to keep it competitive with other stadia, and try to figure out the best way to do that.
Part of the piece that goes along with that is the concrete plant and the indoor facility. Is there anything, any movement on possible indoor?
We are considering ways to make that happen. So I don't know. I should be more up to speed on where our but there could be some. I mean, we are definitely looking to plan for that. So when we have some things to actually report, we'll, I'm sure, be out there saying what we're thinking there.
So not down the road. This is, you're talking more.
But yeah, we're looking actively at some things.
Yeah.
Just because it's such a, it's something that we realize it'd be good for us to have, so we're trying to find out ways.
From like, I mean, a recruiting standpoint?
You might be playing in the
from a recruiting standpoint, just from a practicality standpoint of having an indoor place to practice.
All through January, halfway through February.
Exactly. We plan on needing it all the way to February, so...
What about, you know, the Ring of Honor last year, the new jerseys, the uptick in social? Is there anything new, exciting planned for this year that you can share yet at this point?
Well, I can't obviously share things without being part of the organized plan to report on them. But we have, we're going to do a second round for the Ring of Honor. Okay. And I think the details on how we're going to do that will be coming soon. And there are some other things we're looking at that I think will be interesting, but it's not quite timely to share yet. So we'll let you know. But we're looking for, the draft. I think we'll have a draft. I think we'll have a draft party again this year. Some things just won't. No. But there's some other things, but we'll share in a timely manner.
Time. We just came within a couple minutes of the Bills owners walking by while I asked about the Bills Stadium. But speaking of,
I think they're excited about their process. Yeah. And their stadium, I forget what year it was built, but
one of the oldest.
It was. Yeah. It was. So I think they were in a position where they had to get something done, and I give New York credit for finding a way to make it happen. I mean, I don't know, you guys see the numbers. When we made it to the Super Bowl and they put out those numbers of $4.4 billion worth of media and publicity for Cincinnati, and it was so fun. I mean, the way the town came together, there is a lot of value in having a team. And we try to be as responsible as we can and the way we've made it work. But when you're in a smaller market, you're not going to have access to quite the same amount of revenue as the other markets, and that's why, for better or for worse, smaller markets, I think, end up having to put a little bit more into the stadiums to keep it competitive.
With the owners walking by, just speaking of owners, Mike, I know it was what, 4 or 5 years ago, you mentioned at the pre-camp lunch, I was kind of ceding a little bit of the day-to-day control. How would you characterize
his involvement? He said that for 25 years.
I mean, we see him at practice every day. He's definitely involved, but just how would you characterize
him? He is involved. He's still down at the stadium every day.
Yeah.
Every day. We keep him involved in everything, get his input on everything. But you're right. It's, the rest of us are out there doing more and more reporting back to him rather than him doing it and reporting to us, probably. But he has an active interest in everything that's happening, and he has great insight from all of his experience, and he still wants to be part of everything that's going on, so, which makes me happy. I'm glad to see that.
How many mock drafts has he done already?
He reads all those mock drafts. He loves the draft. But
who's he want to take?
It's harder this year at 31. It's harder to say, but he probably has his list of couple guys that he's targeting.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Jay, you were at this table with Kelsey Conway of The Inquirer and Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com.
Yes, it was the three of us down there, and It was great. Katie was really relaxed, and I was wondering how she, you know, Mike has done these in the past, and Katie, Jeff Hobson had the great story on Katie before they left for the owners meeting about how his lead was, she hates this story already because it's about her and she's not fond of speaking publicly, but I thought she was really transparent and really open and expansive. There was even the one time I just kind of made the quip about the Bills owners walked by right after we got done talking about their new stadium. And, I wasn't trying to reopen that conversation, but she went back to it and said some more about the stadium. So, it was enjoyable. It was a 9 a.m. meeting. And, like I said, we didn't have food, but she gave us all the time we wanted and, really do thank her for that.
So let's start where we have to start here. And that is the Bengals, actively looking at the indoor practice facility. I mean, this was the last box left, right? Like, this is, what are Bengals fans going to complain about now? What is anybody going to complain about now as this franchise turns itself, you know, does a complete 180 on every major talking point held against it? You know, I go back to, you know, when I did the story on Elizabeth Blackburn's kind of arrival into that role, and the lead was, you know, Elizabeth Blackburn reads the comments. It's clear. Because the comments have all been checked off now with the indoor practice facility, clearly now the next last box that they are in the process of figuring out how to check. This was not, and Jay, I mean, you can read body language and other things from down there too, but, you know, listening to it, this was not, we're looking into it. We're going to see what we can do. This was, we're doing it. It kind of sounded like expect to hear something soon.
Yeah, that was exactly it. Where you would think if they're actively looking at it, but there's still not anything in place, that maybe she wouldn't have been so open about it. But it sounded like we're actively looking at it. It's close. We'll have an announcement for you very soon, because she said that a couple of times where she didn't want to step on whatever the rollout was going to be for whatever the topic was we were talking on. You know, Elizabeth has a lot of that planned out, and she didn't want to step on her toes and jump the gun and make an announcement. But it feels like whatever it is that they've got planned is very close to being pushed across the finish line and very close to being announced.
There's a couple of things about this logistically that are going to be important, that are going to be really interesting to see as they do start talking about whatever their rollout ends up being on this, their view of the conversation beyond the fact that they want to do it now, which is the change. They obviously haven't. They have kind of taken pride in the fact that they don't have one almost. They have complained about how much it would cost to do it down there. Not necessarily cost, but that the power grid to the entire city goes underneath that ground. So you can't just build it on the practice field. That's kind of been a big part of their main thing, and that they didn't want to take money out of downtown or out of Hamilton County and move the team to the burbs, like FC Cincinnati, right? And so many NFL teams, they build their practice facility out in the suburbs on some cheap land somewhere, and that's where they practice. I would say the majority of the league does that now. You don't see a lot of teams with practice fields and practice areas down in the middle of downtown. That's just not, I mean, like Cleveland, for example, is out in Berea. You know, Atlanta's out in Flowery Branch. It's just, that's what they do, and they have those facilities out there. The Bengals didn't want to take that money and that their home, quote unquote home, out of Hamilton County, because they do feel indebted to the county for, you know, the stadium deal and everything else. So they haven't felt like it's been logistically very possible to do. Now, the acquisition of the Hilltop property, which is the right across between the river and the practice fields, river and the stadium. You would know that as that kind of, you see that junk there, that whole junky area down along the banks down there. They have that. That was part of the acquisition with the Icon Center being built. was a land swap deal that included them getting that, but they got to move a concrete plant out that has gone incredibly slow. It has not been working out. They haven't been figuring out where to put this concrete plant. It's tied up in county, city, so it's slow to get that going. So any idea that, okay, a practice facility could be part of this future on that land is just taking, it just seems like it's taking forever. And we don't know when that end is going to come. So the question to me is, when eventually will that come, and what is the solution between now and then? Is there some temporary thing that's going to happen as a part of that? And then when it does, and sorry, Jay, as I go off on this tangent, but like, they're running out of office space a little bit up there inside of the stadium. I mean, I think that it's been when you get into 20 plus years, the expansion of that side of the business, marketing and social media and tickets and corporate and everything, has gotten so big. You know, most of these facilities that are out in the burbs include headquarters,
yeah,
office space, tons of room to do all this stuff. So is that going to be something that's going to be a part of this? You know, an indoor facility that includes office space that overlooks it, which you often see, you know, indoor to watch. So very curious to see how much that would be part of an operation and what an investment that would be in staying here long term, which is the other part of this conversation. It all does tie together, Jay, you know?
It does. And you look at the land down there and you wonder where, if it's not the Hilltop plant, where they could put something. Maybe Longworth, they could rent some offices over there. That building is huge and it doesn't seem like that's full, but that doesn't seem like something the Bengals would want to do. You're right. They're going to want to have offices within the inside of the practice facility so they can watch. It's going to be interesting to see. It does sound like we said that something is, the wheels are moving on something. So my question is, if it's not going to be the practice fields that they have now on top of that, which it can't be because of the power grid, then yes, these guys are pro athletes, but you're talking about a pretty substantial walk to go somewhere else. If it's not Hilltop, if it's not right across the street at those practice fields. So how many players are we going to see hitching rides from Mike Brown on his golf cart if they move it even further west of the practice fields? We'll find out in due time where it's going to be, but it's, The same thing goes for if a new stadium is part of it, where would that go? Is there room down? You can't tear one down and build a new one on the same spot. That just takes too long, and then you would not have a home for a couple years. So that, you're right. They don't want to move out into the burbs where a lot of these, Kansas City is looking to, they're already out in the burbs, and now they're looking to leave Missouri and go into Kansas. It's just, that's not what the Bengals want to do. They want to stay downtown, obviously. A lot of time for that to play out. The stadium lease is not up till 2026, but the practice facility will be constructed with contingencies and plans and thoughts of a new stadium as well.
And look, this should have happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
And this goes along with the same way we approached the Ring of Honor conversation. This should have happened a long time ago. It's embarrassing that we're having it in 2022. Again, it's realizing where they're at and approaching the problems that are part of modern NFL. Like, the modernization of the Bengals in terms of the way they do business over the last 3 years since Zach Taylor arrived and Elizabeth Blackburn arrived, and has been remarkable. It's been everything anybody has wanted. It's just be like doing what everybody else is doing in some respect. You know, what players expect, what fans expect, what makes this league fun, what makes players feel like they're in a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry, you know, and that's part of it. And they, you know what, credit these players. They took ownership over, you know, DJ Reader said it a couple of times, man, we don't even have an indoor. You know, it makes us tough, and it made them gritty, and that's great. But at a certain point, it shouldn't make them on a bus in an ice storm going up to Clifton, okay? Like, at a certain point, You can't, that's not where it can be. I think they realize that. And the other part of that is if you think you're going to be playing later into the season every year and the season goes later every year. I mean, your regular season now goes 2 weeks into January. Your playoffs go almost through the entire winter, where you're basically playing through the entire winter almost at this point if you make it to the Super Bowl, as they learned. I mean, there's a practicality element to that too that's part of this, that you just – at a certain point, and that's not even getting into summer OTAs if it's super hot or whatever, or you just have things, you another practice field to have, to want to do things, all of that stuff, the office space, it's obvious that this was something that had to happen.
Yeah, it did. And that's one of the key points. And maybe even this would still be in motion without last year's Super Bowl run, but last year's Super Bowl run really drove home that point, because December and January are they're next to each other, but you still get some warm days in December. That doesn't happen in January. January, it winter really settles in, and it's not just about the toughness of the players practicing in the cold and being tough. I mean, you worry about illness. If it's not just the cold, it's the rain and the snow and the sleet, the wind, all that stuff. You start getting a couple of guys sick, and then it goes through the entire locker room, and then you're at a major disadvantage in the playoffs. It's, you said it, practicality, pragmatic. It has to be done, and it is way too late, but it's the better late than never philosophy here. It took them forever to do it, but they are doing it now, so everyone should just be happy with it, and as you said earlier, find something else to be mad about now.
Well, and we'll see what that is. The thing is, you can't change the past. All you can do is try to do the best that you can right now, and again, they have checked off every box: Ring of Honor, new uniforms, now indoor facility. I mean, you know, you go all the way down this list of things that people, you know, free agency spending. Winning playoff games. People can call it the Joe Burrow effect. I think that's part of it. I think that helps push things along in some, like the free agency things and things like that. But I do think it's also, it is an understanding of the need for this, and people like Elizabeth and Katie helping push it along. And so kudos to them on doing it. Let's talk about the other part of this, because people do bring it up all the time now, as and the stadium lease is coming up in 2026. And now there's an important thing with the stadium lease here. You have 2026 as the lease. That when they redid things, because I believe it was when the Icon deal happened, part of that added in 5 2-year rolling extensions, so a 10-year window to kick the can down the line, essentially, on needing it. And Katie says an important line here to me when she said, you know, look, we think there's still a lot of good years left in this building. And I think most people in there feel that way. You know, to me, the facility, while it's, you know, 20 whatever years old, it doesn't feel that old. Now, when you go to SoFi and you go to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta and you go to Vegas and a lot of these new facilities, obviously it's not that. And there is a certain point where they're going to need to keep up with everybody else, and Katie mentions that. But there is, that's important to remember, that those extension windows of, look, they've got time. It doesn't have to happen immediately. It's not like in 2026 they're going to be like, well, we're out of here. You know, there's an ability to kick this down the line to 2036 as far as that, if they wanted to, or figure out a plan between now and then. But, you know, I thought, he's not hiding it, we're watching these other markets. We're keeping an eye on what's happening here. And look, public funding is a part of this. And she points out that it's been a part of it in most of these places. And I think that's going to be the element that's going to make people uncomfortable around here.
I think it's a good point about that building having more years in it. Maybe the fans could tell us better, because we go into the media room on the ground floor. We go to the press box. It doesn't feel like it has the aura of a rundown stadium. And again, we've never watched the game from the Seating Bowl and walked through the concourses and stuff. But the bigger complaints until recently were how sterile it was, all the gray concrete. And they've done a good job with that of, you now know you are in the Bengals stadium. And they've made the upgrades with the video monitors and the ribbon boards. And they just announced the new deal with new Wi-Fi. Maybe that's something that affects fans more than anything, because they want to check their fantasy teams. They want to be able to get online and send Instagram posts and Snapchats and all that. And poor Wi-Fi goes into that. Another question that kind of lingers out there is, if you're going to ask for public money, do they stick with Paul Brown Stadium, or do they sell naming rights? Because you could bring in a lot of money by selling naming rights, and I don't think that's something they would be interested in doing. But is that going to put people off, where that's kind of free revenue that they would be turning down? There's a lot to a lot of boxes to be checked, and a lot of things that need to come into play before we even get to 2026, let alone, as you mentioned, the 10-year rolling period. It was so contentious in 97. I still think, even with the success they have now, even with everything changing, that is going to be a very hard ask to get public money.
Now, a lot of the money in New York for the Buffalo Stadium came from the state, mm-hmm. and came from the governor. And so how much does that side end up getting involved? There's a lot of different ways to go about it. And we're not going to dive into the logistics of this today. It's a complicated issue that's got plenty of time to go on, and these conversations aren't even going to happen right now. I mean, their negotiation time for this is still a year or two away to even start discussing it. But, you know, again, I think the key thing of this is pointing, you know, Katie saying, look, we see the numbers of $4.4 billion worth of media and publicity for Cincinnati came out of their Super Bowl run, and what that's worth, and how much fun it was for the community, and what that run did for the community. We talked about it here every week, how the city was so damn alive for like 2 months there, and in a way that you just can't generate organically with anything else. And what it does. And so I think it could be the house the Burrow built. There's no doubt. That happens. Willie Anderson famously calls Paul Brown Stadium the house that Jeff Blake built, because Blake brought a slight infusion of happiness into the fan base there, right as they were in the middle of the thick of it, and helped push it over. Maybe that's what it ends up being, whatever. And there's a lot of places for this to go. But the point is that, you know, this is coming, and keep an eye on Buffalo. Keep an eye on Charlotte. Keep an eye on Nashville. Keep an eye in Kansas City. And you know, Warren Sharp had a great tweet, and it was looking back at the public money and the percentage of total funding that came from public money on the last, I believe it was like the last 10 stadiums that were built. You're not going to like what you see if you're begging the Bengals to go build this with their own dime, because that's just not something that's been happening pretty much hardly ever. There's been a ton of public money involved in almost all of these deals. So that conversation will be coming down the line, and we'll see where that ends up. But this is kind of the first broaching of it that we've kind of gotten into since, as these things are starting to come to a head, and these other markets that are very similar sizes too, on the bottom end. We're not talking about the Vegases and the Los Angeles and New York. We're not talking about those. These are different ones when you're talking about Charlotte and Kansas City and Buffalo. So keep an eye on those.
Yeah. And the thing with Buffalo, you mentioned, is a good point where the state jumped in and offered some money, but New York only has one team. The Giants and Jets are in Jersey, and would the state of Ohio do that with two teams? Because then there's going to be the Brown Stadium's about the same age, and there's going to be a lot of hands out there too. If the state sets that precedence of putting in money to help the Bengals, there's a lot to wait and see what's going to happen. I know a lot of fans are more focused on 2022 right now and just crossing their fingers that the stadium part of it will be taken care of in due time.
Okay, we're going to work our way back towards 2022 here, Jay. So let's we're not there yet. Let's talk about Joe Burrow. So another thing, you know, this has kind of been hovering over everything, really, that's been going on. We talked about it a lot in the run-up to free agency, and that was, look, this, the Burrow contract is out there. How much are you planning for that ahead of time? How much do you have to not take money out of this year's team, but structure deals in such a way that you're really trying to heavy front-load any deals that you're doing now and give yourself opportunities to have wiggle room and outs even more than you normally do, which is always something that they do on the back end of these deals when you know Burrow's coming due, and not just Burrow coming due, when Jamar Chase and whatever's going to come of T. Higgins. I mean, when we see the hockey stick up of receiver, the top of the receiver market over this offseason, I mean, unbelievable what happened to that market. I mean, you went from the top of the market being 18, 19, 20 to now the top of the market being approaching 30. Overnight, almost, you know, with Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams and everything that went down this year. Jamar Chase, what is that going to look like? T. Higgins, what is his deal going to have to look like? With Burrows, how much is that even plausible? Do you have to start thinking like the Chiefs did when they trade Tyreek Hill a year before? I mean, there's just a lot of things that come into this, but it starts with the Burrow contract and then what happened with Deshaun Watson. And, you know, I thought it was interesting, and Jay, you can touch on this, you know, Katie kind of saying, like, it's on my list to look at that Watson contract. I haven't gotten to it yet, but knowing that, admitting, yeah, there's a ripple effect on all this stuff.
Yeah, there absolutely is. I mean, there are people upset that Deshaun Watson was the guy that got this first huge $230 guaranteed. But just regardless of who it is, the fact that a quarterback was paid $230 million guaranteed the year before you need to do something with your quarterback, absolutely. That is a huge ripple effect. And it's not something the Bengals like to do, give out tons of guaranteed money. And Katie mentions it, that you don't want to punish the team down the road for a mistake that was made 3 or 4 years prior. And if a player lives up to his performance ability and lives up to the constraints of the contract, he's going to get all that money anyhow. It's not guaranteed, but he's going to get it. So it is. It's really going to be interesting to see, is Joe Burrow and his people going to want $230 million? They're going to say, are they going to say Deshaun Watson got it last year? This is the going rate. This is the template's been set. We want 240. We want 250 guaranteed. And if they do, then what happens? Because it's hard to imagine the Bengals doing that.
It is, but it's also hard to imagine in 3 years that they would do a Ring of Honor New Jersey's an indoor practice facility and win and be in the Super Bowl. But Joe Burrow changes things.
Yes.
And if there was anybody, what did Katie say here? What did she say, right? It's, you don't want future teams to pay for something that's gone bad. If there is one thing that you can say in 5 years will not have been bad, will not have gone wrong, it's Joe Burrow, right? I mean, this, we're not talking, we've already seen him go through the ACL. You know, outside of Tommy John or his arm falling off or something, I mean, what is possibly going to happen to Joe Burrow? Especially if we see him do this season a second time. If we see 2022 is what we expect it to be. Him, he's in the MVP conversation and Bengals win a lot of games because of him. You know, at what point is it, look, we can say that everything comes with a Burrow exception. Will they be willing to say that? It may not be $250 million guaranteed. And I don't know that Burrow would want to do something that would severely hinder and limit what can be built around him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say he's going to be Brady on a hometown. Maybe he is. Maybe he looks at Brady as the way it should go. I don't know. Joe Burrow doesn't have Giselle making more money than him. But he does, you know, we don't know what that, we just don't know. I'm going to say, though, to me, I do think with Burrow, there will be a willingness. Let's not forget, they made Boomer Esiason the highest paid player in football. They made Carson Palmer the highest paid player in football. They paid Andy Dalton, for God's sakes, before anybody thought they would. Gave him $96 million. So they pay quarterbacks. I said this last time. Don't forget that. So when we talk about this conversation and what Katie had to say, yeah, they're thinking about it because they're very, very focused. Number one priority, keeping Joe happy, paying Joe. Knowing that's part of this. So keep that all in mind when you think about the context of what you're hearing Katie say here.
Yeah, and we know they're always looking. This was part of their, when they drafted him, they knew this was coming. They've been planning for it, and it's, you can never anticipate the way that the contracts are going to get bigger. You can never anticipate something crazy like $230 in guaranteed money. The scary part is, yes, you don't expect Joe Burrow something to go wrong there, but it's football. You know, what if there's a shoulder injury or something like that, any kind of injury where the guy is never the same after that? That's where that's where the risk comes in with that guaranteed money, where you're paying someone way more than what their value has actually become. But that's the unpredictable nature of football anyhow. When you get into this business, you know you have to deal with that. It's like the stadium deal, and even the indoor, even though that's closer, it's just something that it's going to be really, really interesting to see what direction they go when the time comes. They're thinking about it big time. They're talking about it, but the action on that is still a year away.
A season of Joe Burrow play away. And so we'll continue to watch that. And, you know, you do see these deals go awry. I mean, look at all the dead money that people got saddled with. Jared Goff, Carson Wentz. By the way, both teams that made it to the Super Bowl not with that quarterback in terms of Wentz. He didn't finish the year, but he was kind of the Super Bowl quarterback that got them in the position. Goff went to the Super Bowl. Both of them became dead money anvils on the team that they had to unload. So it's not like it doesn't go from early in the career Super Bowl to disaster of a contract quickly, or that there's no precedent for that, I shouldn't say. I don't know that that will be the case with Joe Burrow. I think people view Burrow differently, but people thought very highly of Goff and Wentz at that point in time. Things do change even without injury, but I think another season of them playing at a very, very high level certainly wouldn't hurt matters. And sometimes it's just kind of a chance you have to take. The cost of doing big quarterback business, it's better than being on the opposite end of it, like some of the other teams out there trying to figure out a way to sell Mitch Trubisky to the fans. So, Jay, let's just dive into some other stuff. Other takeaways from the conversations. Jesse Bates, maybe start there. What you thought about what was said about Jesse.
Yeah, the fact that she's not closing the door on getting him re-signed, I don't know how realistic it is that it will happen, but, you know, Katie said they tried to sign him last year, which he talked about too, where he said, you know, I guess they don't view me as the one of the best safeties in the league, which would indicate it was somewhat of a low ball offer. It's not as though the door has closed, but it is right now. It's closed. It's not locked. They've hit an impasse, and there's really not any back and forth going on right now. But she did say that they will try to revisit it and try to work on it. And she didn't really want to get into the ramifications of Jesse sitting out not sitting out, but just skipping the voluntary workout. She said that's his decision to make. We'll see what happens there. But there was nothing in that conversation that added more optimism to the fact that they can reach a long-term deal. It doesn't mean they won't or can't, but it wasn't anything that made you think, maybe something's down the road.
I mean, I don't know how you could be optimistic at this point. Came in with optimistically twice. So why would you all of a sudden be like, oh, but I'm sure that third time it's going to be different. than when we really thought we were going to get it done before the season and we really thought we were going to get it done before the franchise tag. Oh, yeah, that third time's definitely going to be different. Totally different conversation. Maybe it will be. But the idea that you're going to be sitting here with optimism today is just false. Like, that just it just seems that they're just clearly viewing things in two very different ways. And it's and the question is going to be a matter of if Jesse wants the security over the extra couple million dollars a year of not having to worry about it anymore. And that's up to him. That is a tough decision to have to make as a player and a tough thing to have to go through that type of a season again. But I think that's where it's at. With everything that we just talked about on the horizon, I certainly don't see the Bengals all of a sudden being like, "You're right, Jesse. We can." That's really in the Brown family history. Just caving after a long time. Yeah, that always happens. Never, ever,
no.
Ever is there like a cave going back on what they say that where they're at. It just the idea of being bullied is comical to me. It's going to be a thing where either Jesse says the security is worth it, having the money in hand, the long-term contract is worth it, or not. Or there's not enough guaranteed money in here to really make it worth it for me anyway. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe he says, yeah, look, the franchise tag is just as much guaranteed as you're willing to give me, so I end up in the same spot at the end of this year anyway. So maybe that's what it is. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not surprised that the optimism meter is still low on that.
Yeah. We got July 15th is the deadline. So we've got, 3.5 more months to wait on this.
What else, Jay? Anything else? A second Ring of Honor class sounds like it's on the way, which is good. Good news for people that enjoyed that and want to see them kind of knock out a few more names early before they maybe if they eventually start spreading it out or whatever it is. But sounds like there's going to be another round of names going in this year.
Yeah, no details on it yet, but you would expect it would probably be scheduled for the night of a primetime game. And you can probably bank on, I don't know, if you're talking inductees, it's how much they want to play catch up or how much they want to kind of build the drama. I would think it would be either 2 or 4. Maybe they go 4 again for the second class. Maybe they just go 2 and try to play this out. That to me is the most interesting piece of this is how many members of this year's class they're going to be.
We'll have time to talk about that when they announce it. 2 feels right to me, but whatever. I mean, they can do it however they want to at this point. The fact that they're doing it and doing it again, I think, is half the battle. All right. Anything else? The overtime play. Jay, you have overtime trivia. So there was 29-3 on the overtime vote. Bengals one of the 3 dissenters, which we talked about at the top of the show. Katie basically saying, we don't really like things being different between the regular season and the postseason. Kind of want it to be the same during the entire course of the year. She didn't have a problem with them voting it this way. It's fine to go play it that way, but that's why she voted. Part of why she said no, she didn't like the idea of it being different, playing a different game in the regular season versus the postseason.
Yeah, that and she said she loved the sudden death aspect of it, but that there's always going to be no matter whether you guarantee teams 1 possession, 2 possession, whatever, there's always, at some point it's going to come down to the sudden death aspect of it. So it's you get into the unfairness thing where are you setting it up where this could be a really long game and then that team in the playoffs is hamstrung the following week. She did bring up a point too where I kind of joked about it when the vote was announced that a tradition unlike any other. We always see the Bengals voting against these rules. And, she has said, and I think this has been said before, that when Mike votes on these things, he doesn't vote necessarily in what he thinks is best for the Bengals. He always has in his mind what is best for the league, which almost sounds counterintuitive because if most of the league is voting for it, why is he voting against it? But she did kind of allow that was his thought process on a lot of these votes. I had some stats in the story. I went back and looked at the Bengals have played 40 overtime games in their history. They're 18-4 in overtime games. The news now, of course, deals with scoring a touchdown and that not ending the game. The Bengals of those 40 overtime games they've played have scored one overtime touchdown. Do you know who it is?
One overtime touchdown?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Who had their only overtime touchdown? I mean, I'm sure when you say it, I'll remember the game or whatever, but a walk-off. I don't know.
Yeah, it was memorable. You will remember it once I say it was Corey Sawyer, a 53-yard pick six of Scott Mitchell against the Lions in 1998.
Corey Sawyer of Key West, Florida, where I formerly worked. How about that? Wow.
That made them 1-1 that year, 1998, and then they lost 11 of the next 12 to finish 3-13, and they went out and drafted Akili Smith.
things were going well.
Yes.
Wow, that's really good. I, you know, the overtime, the interesting thing is, you know, there's a lot of really good. I said this. I rely on the math people to tell me what they think. You know, they're out there. You can read them. Ben Baldwin does stuff for us. Seth Walter at ESPN. These guys are great at looking at what does the math say on what you should do. What I like is it seems that it really is more of a coin flip now in terms of the percentages. You know, the problem that they had and why this got passed was because you had, you know, in playoff overtime or whatever it was, I mean, 10-2 was the record of the team that won the coin toss, and 7 of them scored on the first drive. Mm-hmm. We all heard the coin toss reaction in Kansas City at the AFC Championship game in the overtime coin toss. It was maybe the loudest roar from the crowd all day. Mm-hmm. And when they won the coin toss, if we're eliminating that, that's what matters. Like, if people should not care. It should not matter which way it goes. That's why I'm team spot and choose. And just say whatever the one team chooses where the ball goes, and the other team chooses if they want to do offense or defense. So they're going to be pinned back in their own end or wherever it is. Spot and choose. Everybody feels comfortable and that it's even. That's fine. This is fine. I just, as long as, you know, this, I think getting the ball second is the way to go, because the information that you would have, you're not, no chance that you could lose, but you go into it knowing exactly what you need in your drive. You know, if you need, you obviously know if you would need a touchdown or a field goal, which is not necessarily different, but now you know you could go for two there. You know to be going for it on fourth downs. It's like the first team that gets the ball and it's 4th and 6 at their own 28, they're punting. Okay. Second team that gets the ball, the other team has already scored a touchdown. It's 4th and 6 at your own 28. You're going for it. And because you know you need to go for it. That information is very valuable. And to me, I think that offsets, you know, the getting the ball first and third, when the new sudden death would be third technically. So either way, the math people seem to say it's coin flip, but an actual coin flip. So I'm down for that.
I'm fascinated to see how many teams will defer, because you're right. Everything you said there, the other element here, not just not getting the ball second and knowing what you need to do, but if you trust your defense, it depends on how the game's going. If it's a low scoring game, you defer and hope you can get a 3-and-out or limit that team. And then all of a sudden you're starting with the ball at your own 40, just needing 25 yards to get a field goal to win the game. But the flip side there is the whole reason this is in place is because offenses are so good and dominating the game. And it's almost assumed that you're going to get the ball and go down and get a touchdown. So both teams score touchdowns. If you deferred, now you're in that, you're getting one possession to your opponents too. And that's where I think the risk comes in, but it will be really fascinating to see. I don't know how long it's going to be before we see someone defer in overtime with this new rule. I think it's going to happen, and it'll probably happen sooner than a lot of people think. Some people seem to think that is the way to go. I'm not sure of that, because of the fact that if it goes touchdown, touchdown, now you're in that position where you have to get a stop, but somebody's going to do it. Maybe it's a 13-10 game and you say you're going to go with your defense first. It'll be really interesting to see. And the other thing is, it's hard to lean on analytics when you have nothing to lean on. This is a brand new world, uncharted territory. So it's going to be fascinating to see what tack the coaches take when they win the coin flip.
Who knows how long it could be? We got to get an overtime game in the playoffs again first. So who the hell knows when that's going to happen? There were a bunch of them this past year, but that doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a bunch. Let's dive into some reader questions here real quick because we've got a few of them. I've got a mailbag up Friday. But I wanted to pluck a few out here just for us to talk about with you. Brandon S. asks, how many more starters or key rotational guys do you see the Bengals pursuing in free agency? I'll let you kick it off, Jay.
I think they're pretty much spent. If you're talking outside guys, maybe if that cornerback market comes down. The reason a lot of those guys are sitting out there now is because they're at or above 30 and they're asking for too much money. Maybe they go get one of those guys if the market bottoms out, but I don't see it. I think you're gonna see Kevin Huber come back. Obviously, that's the one current Bengals free agent that's still unsigned. I think that's a no brainer that he really wants to break that record for most games played by a Bengal. He's not gonna haggle over cost too much. I think they can find a fair deal to bring him back and let him compete with Drew Chrisman. Some of the other guys, you know, Trey Flowers, he's in that situation. Quentin Spain, the guys they would like to get back, but not at maybe what they're asking right now. They technically have money available under the cap, but we talk about this year after year after year, where they allot this money for different things, and what they're willing to spend is almost tapped out. So I don't, outside of maybe a couple guys that were on their roster last year that they bring back on cheap deals, I don't think you're going to see much, if any, activity of them going and getting new free agents.
Yeah, I mean, I think they still have interest in bringing Trey Flowers back. You mentioned Huber. Then I think they'll let the draft happen and then revisit. You know, we've seen them do that in the previous years. Mike Daniels, I don't know when was Apple signed? I feel like he was after the draft.
Yeah, I thought it was May.
May. I mean, either way, we've seen this happen where in previous years where draft happens and then they relook at their roster and like, really could use a little more depth here or trade for BJ Hill, right? I mean, where they then reevaluate and look what's out there. And at that point, the market has come down and those players are starting to freak out that they won't have anywhere to play when camp comes. And so that to me is where then they revisit, look where their money stands, look what the market has done to those names that are out there and what their depth looks like and how the draft maybe didn't go their way. And that's where you see another strategic calculated move happen. That could be any number of spots. All right. A couple of more fun ones here. Run, pass, or boot. Career championships. Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. Run, pass, or boot.
my knee-jerk instant is run with Joe Burrow.
Can I switch it to AFC championships?
Okay, sure. I don't know if
that
Joe
changes
Burrow.
Things in case they get traded to the NFC or something like that. But
yeah,
let's. If that, do you feel like it changes it, we can leave it at Super Bowl. But
now is it AFC Championship moving forward, or does Burrow already have a 1-0 lead?
Moving forward.
Okay, I'll still run with Joe Burrow. I just don't. I mean. I love Deshaun Watson as a player, but this is a weird situation and that there's still stuff hanging out there. It's still the Browns. Things can go south in a hurry. The Lamar Jackson thing is just weird with, he seems in no hurry to get a deal done. The Ravens, I didn't want to say they bottomed out, but they were pretty disappointing last year. I don't want to say it's a no-brainer, but it's close to it. This is an easy run on Joe Burrow, and the hard decision comes here for the pass or the boot. And I guess with the proven history, the Ravens have gone to the Super Bowl. John Harbaugh, I think at this point, is still a better coach than Stefanski. So I'll pass on Lamar and I'll boot Deshaun Watson. I think that's got a chance for I love the roster. I love the way he plays, but I think that's got a chance to go south.
There's a lot to be said about Deshaun Watson. I mean, and I don't mean in the off the field stuff. I just mean in like, how will it mesh in Cleveland strictly on the field? And then obviously the off the field questions that surround him are part of this too. I don't know what's going on with Lamar. It's a very confusing situation to me.
Like, it is.
The Ravens are saying Lamar won't talk about it with us. Lamar's tweeting, I don't know why people don't think I want to be there. I'm a Raven. Love my Raven people. And you wonder about his longevity. You know, will he be like a running back that he deteriorates a little bit in his running ability? That's such a big part of his game. And to a lesser extent, you can say the same about Watson, who's very much of the mobile quarterback mold. We know what Burrow is. The model's Tom Brady. Like the goal, the dream is him. He plays like Brady. And the longevity can be part of that. Or Manning, and you hope nothing bad ever happens like that with his injury. But, you know, where the chances of staying safe and getting the ball out quick and avoiding contact and still being able to be back there and do your thing, you know, you could add many more years, I think, than these guys. So I agree with you. I think Burrow is the clear answer here as the run. The boot, I think I'll pass on Watson and I'll boot Lamar Jackson. I worry about longevity with Lamar. I don't know what the hell's going on with his Ravens situation in terms of locking him up, because I do think it's a part of him being there. They understand him. He fits there. He's proven he can get close to the championship there. I think Harbaugh's good for him. But if it ends up, he ends up going somewhere else, or something weird happens, I don't like that. So that's why I would boot Lamar. Simon H. says, big love from London. We always love our folks over there. Maybe we'll be seeing you this year. If you had to predict the number of primetime games and against who, which would it be? Now you can max six and then get flexed into one more. I don't know that they'll hit the max. You know, look, you would think so, having been in the Super Bowl. But then you look at the way people talk about them. And we've talked about this, about how, oh, they're kind of a fluke. And you know, who really, I don't know, maybe a lot of people aren't thinking that they're just going to regress. I'll pot them for, you're going to have a Thursday game. I put the over under at 4.5 prime time.
Yeah.
I think it could be 5, could be 4. What do you think?
I wrote down 4.
Yep.
And early, where they have the chance to get flexed into a couple later. I don't know that the league, the networks are going to be totally sold on the Bengals with knowing what the typical regression is of a Super Bowl loser, knowing what the Bengals have been in the past, knowing how hard the AFC is now. I don't think anybody's like, oh yeah, that team is, they're going to be right, exactly what you're looking for, top of the AFC. I know a lot of Bengal fans feel that way, but I'm not sure that the executives and the TV executives in the league are sold that way or sold on that yet. So I think you'll see 4 scheduled, 3 early. I do think there's a really good chance that it's Bengals Chiefs Sunday Night Football Week 1. You see that a lot. The Super Bowl winner gets the Thursday night kickoff game. The Super Bowl loser usually gets Monday or Sunday night football. They could easily go Rams 49ers kickoff NFC championship game rematch, then Sunday night Bengals Chiefs AFC game championship rematch. They cannot put the Bengals on Monday Night Football in Week 1. The Reds are home, so that one's out. So it would have to be Sunday Night Football. As far as other ones, I think a Thursday night Bengals Browns game makes sense again, and maybe they push that one. That's the one later in the season where they don't have to worry about a Deshaun Watson possible suspension. And then the other opponents, I don't know.
I mean Tampa, right?
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like Thanksgiving primetime game. Brady and Burrow.
I mean, I think Thanksgiving is a very real possibility for us this year for where we're going to be, where we're going to be at, Jay.
This will surprise you, but I went back and looked because, yes, they do play at Dallas, but not since 1979-80 has Dallas played AFC opponents on Thanksgiving in back-to-back years. They always rotate that. It's Fox one year, it's NBC the next, or I'm sorry, CBS the next. They played host to the Raiders last year, and that game was on CBS. Fox is going to want the Cowboys, not the Lions this year. So I think we're going to see Dallas play an NFC opponent on Thanksgiving. But that Thursday night primetime game really does set – that would be a great spot for a Brady Burrow primetime game to get great ratings.
I think you're right. I mean, yeah, Thursday night of Thanksgiving, very real possibility for that one. I think you could see. I'm torn because the home games, the Bills game. I mean, I think would point to happening, but it's two small markets, which is weird. Even though they're two of the premier teams in football. I think it does end up in prime time just because of the quality of the two teams and the quality of the two young quarterbacks. But it's weird because you just have two kind of small market teams and you wonder who maybe would go for that. Maybe it just ends up like a CBS 4 o'clock window. You're probably gonna see a lot more of those. We're not gonna get many of our beloved Sunday at ones, Jay.
That's a shame.
It really is a shame. It's hurtful for us. To me, those obviously stand. I still think they're going to want Bengals-Ravens. I think Bengals-Ravens is going to be something that people are going to be intrigued by. People like the Ravens a lot. They know what happened last year. I think Bengals-Ravens, those division games always seem to – they do sometimes find their ways into primetime too. It'll be fun to see how – they're viewed and what happens because of the Super Bowl run. But I'm with you. 4, maybe 5. I'd be really surprised if it was less than 4. I'd be surprised if they maxed them out at 6.
You mentioned it, the possibility of London. That would be Saints. It just doesn't make sense that they would not let Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow have that homecoming to New Orleans. That's another one that feels like if it is in New Orleans where it's supposed to be, could a great possibility of being a primetime game.
But the Saints don't want a bunch of Bengals fans in their building.
Yeah, but so they don't make the schedule.
If the league says, screw it, we want a good team in London because we get accused of never sending good teams over there. Send your Bengals game over there. The Saints aren't going to say no. Do we want to not have like 75% Bengals fans and Burrow jerseys in our building while we trot out Flamis, you know? So I'm that's all I'm saying. We'll keep it. We got plenty of time to talk schedules. It gets closer. We're gonna wrap it up with this. John N. asks, what is the heaviest metal band Jay has ever listened to? I'm waiting for a metal version of the HTB TPG theme. If you're listening, Bengal Boys, who do our theme, who've done our different themes, and they're awesome. They're looking for something hard. Heavy metal here. So maybe if you guys have some time and you're interested, fire one off. What is the heaviest metal band you have ever seen live, Jay?
Man, that's a good question.
I thought you'd have this one like right on the top of the head.
Well, no, because I mean, I do like hard rock, but I don't, not the heavy screaming stuff, because when I go to concerts, it's different than when I listen in my car. Cause when I go to concerts, I'm with my wife and she, Metallica is even a little too hard for her. I've never seen Metallica in concert. That is the big hole in my resume. We've been talking about trying to do that, maybe going to the Pittsburgh show this year. So I'm not sure I can come up with an answer. Cause if I name someone, Korn went hard. That was the one. We had great seats and you could feel the percussion. Like it felt like your shirt was vibrating. That one was really strong. You know, we've seen at some festivals where you see some up and comers who you don't really know who they are that were pretty hard, but I'm not sure. I, I this is a hard one to answer on the spot. I'll have to give this some thought, and I'll go through my concert database and tweet my answer later.
There you go. That's what I was going to say. When the show comes out, Jay, you will tweet your answer. You have to tweet your answer with the tweet about this show.
All right, to answer I'll do
this
that.
Question Deal. For people before they listen. So we'll keep that in mind. I'm excited to see. Like, did you ever go to Pantera?
I'd never seen Pantera. Never saw Motorhead. Never saw Judas Priest. So it's, yeah, this is going to be hard.
Did Mullet J ever? Well, I guess you weren't in the mullet anymore when Limp Bizkit came around. They were pretty like angry.
You know, I've seen Iron Maiden several times. That might be the one that stands. But I will. I'll go through it and I'll include it with my tweet.
I look forward to that. Jay, I hope you enjoyed Palm Beach. I hope you're happy to return to windy Cincinnati. I'm glad that your plane landed okay despite the crosswinds. We used to my oldest when she was younger, she used to like to watch plane videos on my phone. Like she just liked watching planes and stuff. And so in a way to make it entertaining for me and for her, I would find those 10-minute YouTube clips of just planes like trying to land in crosswinds and nearly wreck, which I may have traumatized her for wanting to fly the rest of her life, but it was helpful in the moment. I found it entertaining to watch that. And that's how I envisioned you trying to land at CVG, you know, across through the windstorm last night. But I'm glad everything went well and that you're back here safely in Cincinnati.
You traumatized me. You tweeted or you texted me a GIF of one of those planes. And that was it. Luckily, did not happen. It was a smooth landing. But it's always fun when it's bumpy like that because you kind of look around and you can tell who the first time flyers and who the experienced ones are, because the white knuckles and anxious looks on the faces are pretty telling.
I have a hard time. I'm not gonna say I don't stay calm, but the heavy chop still it still shakes me up a little bit. Like, yeah, it's hard not to start thinking about what you're gonna do if this thing goes sideways. Am I gonna make a phone call? Like, do I have service? You check, see if you have service, so that your last text can go through.
Like, why did I pick exit row? Can I renege? I'm opening that door and getting out. I'm not helping anybody.
Jay, you made a vow to the flight attendant.
Verbally.
It's like that scene. It's the scene in Seinfeld where they think the fire's happening, whatever, and George just busts through and he throws the grandmas to the side and the clowns, everybody else, and so he can get out the front door. That's you. That's you. It's not right. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Executive Vice President Katie Blackburn, and we'll be back next week because we're full into draft coverage now coming out of the owners' meetings. We're about a month away, so a month away from the draft, and we'll dive into all those decisions and bring in a lot of guests here for you over the next month. Looking forward to that. So we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.